San Francisco, my home office, but I know that all of us, I think, are probably sheltering in place, depending on where we're calling in from in the world. I'm glad to spend a little bit of time with you. I'm on the Organization Design Forum board, and this is a volunteer role, and it's a volunteer role to facilitate these calls. So I'm thrilled to kind of hold the space for you today to create this dialogue and conversation. We do a structured approach because, you know, there's a group of, what are we at, 13 or more? And we want to make sure that everybody has a chance to share and share their thinking, which means we use a structured approach to do that. And then we open it up at the end for a little bit more unstructured dialogue. We also do use the chat box, as Tanya said, just because that is another way that doesn't rely on the verbal space. And you can communicate with each other through that chat box. So again, I encourage you to open that chat box up. It's at the bottom of your screen. It's a thought bubble that says chat. You're welcome to chime in there. You know, where you're calling from, what you're doing, a little bit of welcome to the rest of the group if you'd like to do that. I see a couple of people chiming in there. The other thing I'd ask you to do is, if you open the participant box, because we do a structured approach, what that means is I'll be calling on you and inviting you to participate. So I need to know if anybody is just observing today, because then I won't call on you. So you have the option. This goes out a newsletter. There's 5-6 articles. Those have gone out in advance. Our conversation will be around those articles. And so we do like to check in and see if there's anybody who is just listening and observing. You're more than welcome to do that. We always have people who do that. And so you can either message me privately. You can raise your hand. I'm going to give you a couple of options. So if you open the participant list, you could raise your hand there, and that'll tell me you're just you're just observing. Sorry about that. Or send me a text, put in the text box. If you're just observing, I won't be calling on you guys. And I'm just going to kind of check my names here. Thank you guys for checking in and let me know who's observing.
Janet. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi, I'm not on the Zoom. I'm just on audio, so I can't raise my hand or anything. So I will just be observing today.
You're observing. Okay, great. Thanks for letting me know.
Thank you.
All right. Everybody's chiming in. Thanks, observing. All right. John, Hillary.
All right. I do see we have someone on a 224 phone number. I'm happy to add their name in if they'd like.
That would be Michael McGovern.
Okay. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
All right, I think we've got partially, that's great. Sorry, you guys, I'm managing the chat here. Okay, great to see so many new faces and welcome to old friends that I haven't seen or spoken to in a while. If when I go around the circle and call on you and I miss your name, I apologize in advance. I'm trying to, as we got all are doing now, I'm managing the screen, the chat, trying to look at your faces and trying to think of my facilitation. So if I don't call on you, I apologize in advance. Please, you know, chime in and say you forgot about me and we'll make sure that you participate. Those of you who are just observing, as I said, we're going to do a structured round of asking about the articles and then we'll open it up. So, you know, feel free to contribute in the chat box and during that open space as well. The final thing is if I call on you and you don't want to speak at that time, you always have the right to pass, right? You should not feel that you're put on the spot or you're obligated to participate. So if I, you know, call your name and you're not thinking you're ready or you're still formulating a thought, just say pass. And I'll come back to you. All right. This is, we try to use some structures so that we're inclusive and we cover everybody. But we also want you to have some control over when you contribute. All right. So I think, do we have a couple of other people that came in? Let me just make sure here. I think we're good. All right. Thanks, Tanya, for putting in the names on the phone numbers. That is super helpful. All right. So just a quick rundown. So the articles, they go out a few weeks ago. I'm pulling up my list here, and this is not something I could ever do from memory. There was an article on the Boeing and McDonnell Douglas merger and its implication on the organization, its culture, and the path that led, unfortunately, to the devastating crashes of the MAX planes. There was an interesting article in HBR around a culture of experimentation. Primary example there was booking.com, but it really addresses the degree of experimentation, what that looks like to set it up culturally, what it looks like to have a pervasive, my word, I don't know if that word was in the article, culture of experimentation. There was a video, which I'm going to be honest, I didn't have time to watch, from the Peter Drucker forum. So hopefully I'm looking for somebody to have some interesting tidbits on that one. The work from Nicolay Warren around reconfig, so a software to help find optimal org design options or solutions and designs. So it was an update on the use of that software, applying it to some at clients and their learnings from it. And then there was an exhaustive, like if you didn't read it, you want to read it and you want to bookmark it, blog by Sergio Carrera, and I'm not sure how he pronounces his name, but that's how I would do it. But a, you know, a summary of the breadth of organizational design models that are out there, what their key characteristics are, and trying to help us make sense of them. So why would you use them? What are the, how do we compare and contrast them? Clearly a work in progress. He's actively taking feedback. You'll see that at the bottom where he says, I've now adapted some other things based on feedback. So if you're interested in org design and that, I mean, I was blown away at the comprehensiveness of that list. So bookmark it if you haven't yet. And I definitely encourage you to take a read when you have time. So that was what our wonderful curator put together for us for this month. Oh, welcome, Gina. How are you? And so we're going to start, and we're going to start with the question, which is what themes, this was prompted as well in the email that went out, is what themes did you notice or stuck out, you know, were noticeable to you as you read through all of the materials?
Can I ask one, before we go to that, I'm just curious about I did the same thing. I read all the articles. I didn't have time to go through the lengthy, I think it's like 25 minutes, that video. And I was wondering if at some point we could just get a pulse on that and maybe provide feedback to the curatorial board, because this is not the first time this has happened where, you know, what same thing you said, you didn't have time to get through the video. Maybe it'd be nice if they took those long videos and gave them to us as a bonus, as opposed to part of the content. Because again, like I said, we've just had people struggle with that before. So just wanted to put that question out there to try to resolve and go forward with everything else. Thanks.
Okay, so let's come back to that, Gina, if we would, about, let's just do it now. So if you watch the video, could you guys raise your hand? So if you're using the participant screen, I'd be curious, just we're going to do a quick scan, if you could raise your hand. And those of you, so Michael and Lisa, did you watch the video?
No, I did not.
Lisa did not. All right. So I'm not seeing any hands
raised. I saw two hands physically raised. So Diane and... Yeah.
I observed it, but I wasn't really absorbing it as it was playing in the background for the same reasons.
Yes, so I would say three or four people. Jardina's got
there's some who raised their hand in the chat. So Craig, Hillary, Benaj, Jardina. So 4 to 6.
I think there's a similar question out there too about the article that was behind a paywall or similar.
Yeah, the paywall was the other one. The very first article was behind a paywall.
I haven't seen the video.
All right.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks for that input. So Gina, well, good feedback. Thank you for that check-in. So we're going to turn to that first question, is what themes did you notice as you read through the materials you could get to, the materials you had time to read? And I'm going to start with Diane, if you don't mind. I'm going to pop around my screen.
Not at all. I didn't get through all the articles, but two of my favorites, the building a culture of experimentation and the report from the field, the themes I kind of picked up on was experimentation and data-driven experimentation. So those two articles really hit home with me, but I didn't get to the Boeing article and the video. So might have been some other themes there, but experimentation and the data-driven experimentation.
Great. Great. Thanks, Diane. How about Ernest?
Ernest or Ernie is fine, or Lincoln Ernie. is my Starbucks name. if you want to meet there, but you can't. I really enjoyed the set of articles and felt the curators did a good job of what I call the sort of 21st century problem, which is our theory doesn't match practice. And it is sometimes difficult to try to look retrospectively at things and say, you know, it would have been different if we would have known this then. and maybe we should be looking forward and to say, how can we get people to look at what we know now and use it? And I'll say more when we get to the Boeing article, because I actually worked there at the time and was involved top level, but at some of the more professional levels and managerial levels on what happened before then and during then. And they've been a client. So I have some more thoughts to add there.
Wonderful. I saw a lot of interested head nodding as you said that. So we'll come back and we'll talk more about that. Look forward to it. Diane. Oh, I already spoke to Diane. I guess your name is twice on my list. Hold on, you guys. Sorry, I'm keeping track here. Jardina, how about you?
So I want to change my answer because I liked Ernie so much. I love the concept of theory not matching practice and not even seeming to trend with it, right? Like we're not even like a consistent lag behind that we can count on. But my answer before I heard that one was, you know, what we see a lot here, which is it's culture, it's human system, it's adaptability and sense and respond. I think that was a theme last time too, but it's a theme again.
All right. Lots of... Arnold, I can't recall. You're participating, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm the partial participant. Because I only read two of the four pieces. One piece that I was trying to open up kept crashing and kept freezing my computer, but the system could be overloaded because we're all working virtually. I mean, the two that I did read, the Boeing piece and the... and the one on experimentation. I mean, they represented polar opposites, you know, one where, you know, a lot of the issues around the Boeing situation was driven by the Lockheed, you know, involvement in terms of, you know, cost versus, innovation, which Boeing had a history of. And I remember years ago reading a paper about how Boeing developed the 777, you know, that it was the first time that a plane had been, and this was before the Lockheed, I think, merger, that, you know, Boeing had, was the first to use a total, you know, computer-aided design system to design the electrical systems with a 777. And that was mind-boggling for me, who flies all too often, and realized that before that, you know, all the wiring systems were figured out in the field by hand. But the second piece was on experimentation, was just the total opposite, you know, where the bookings, you know, .com, you know, did have a culture that revolved around innovation and experimentation. I think it raises questions in terms of, you know, why does one become more successful and why one becomes, problematic in the case of Boeing, devastatingly problematic.
Lots of contrast there. Thank you, Arnold. Banaz, how about you? Did I pronounce your name correctly?
Yes, you did. Hello. It's my first time as well. Welcome. So I'll just chip in with whatever I have. The reflection so far, I would like to build on that because those are the things that resonated with me as well, like the experimentation, theory not matching practice or reality of things, or it's a constant game of catching up. The other thing is the cultural element of it. I think it was interesting to see this contrast between Boeing case and the Booking.com case, where one can see that if experimentation, innovation is embedded in the culture of the organization, then there's a difference, then it can make a difference. So it was quite interesting to see that.
Great, thank you, Vinaz. Nadezhda, I probably did not pronounce that correctly.
That was very close enough, thank you. My first time here as well. Really curious. I watched the full video. I read all the articles except the Boeing one. The topics that emerged for me were data-driven intentional experimentation. So something that is done by intent. The human side, unlocking organizational potential through individual approach. So not even on the culture side, but how we treat individuals and how it on a larger scale unlocks the organizational potential. And even zooming out from this, about witnessing ecosystem evolving bottom up. There was some interesting perspectives in that video.
That was from the video, okay. Mm. Which you heard a lot of us did not get to the video. All right, so I think I'm still waiting to hear from Michael. I haven't invited Michael to participate, is that right? Did we lose Michael? I mean, he's there, but we're not.
No, I'm here. Yes, okay. I was just planning to observe today.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. And Mark, would you like to participate? If you're speaking, Mark, you're on mute. Hello, Mark.
Hi, thank you for asking me to comment, but today I'd like to observe as well. Thank you.
Okay, lovely. Thank you for joining.
Thank you.
So Barbara, I think you joined a little bit late, but it is an opportunity if you've read the articles and you want to participate, but you've heard other folks, you can also decline.
Thank you. I just planned to listen. I'm sorry for being late.
No worries. So did I miss anybody who was planning or who's read a couple of the articles and wants to join in regarding the themes that they saw? Or
I can chime in.
Gina, you're not on my list.
I was a minute late, so I apologize. I thought that the theme was how very difficult it is to sustain innovation. Because the booking.com example is great. They started it, but you know how they're trying to sustain it. And of course it takes time to be able to tell because Boeing's problems are I think back to deregulation in the 1970s because that's when it stopped. I mean, they got their clock cleaned by American Airlines and.
Oh, you went on mute. Gina, you're on mute. Oh, back on mute. No, we can't hear you, Gina. Tanya, did you mute her?
I didn't intentionally. I'm trying to see if I can unmute her now, but we're conflicting with each other, possibly.
It's like the car door lock, unlock. There we go.
I apologize. I'm having terrible problems with my Zoom. For some reason, it keeps trying to change my default speaker and microphone, and there's only one to go to. So I don't know what the problem is. Anyway, I just wanted to say that I thought it was the sustaining innovation. You know, I thought that was a theme throughout this and how very many. I'm with you on that article with the summary of organization design. I thought I had no idea there was this many books that people have put this much effort into thinking of how to organize to just try to you know, bring those ideas up. So that was my theme.
All right, thank you. So let's see, I heard, you know, the experimentation being data-driven and being intentional. I heard that kind of polarity of you know, cost and focusing on cost maybe versus innovation, intentional versus embedded culture, how it either shows up at an individual level to unlock potential, how we treat individuals and their possibility to impact that. And then that idea of theory not matching practice, right? Looking backwards instead of forwards. Maybe our theory doesn't match what we're seeing, but what are we, it's a nice observation. I'm always left with the question of, so what do we do with that? So a lot of energy around experimentation, innovation. So let's spend a little bit of time there and try to unpack that a little and talk about what did you find compelling? What did you like most, I guess, about that idea of either the importance of innovation or the way that companies are or are not able to innovate successfully? And I don't know, again, I didn't get to read the Boeing article, so I'm not sure how to fit that in there. So maybe we start there, since that's a little bit of a older company model compared to Booking.com. And Arnold, if you said you had some other things to share around that. So maybe we enter into that conversation on experimentation from the Boeing perspective. Arnold, if you'd like to.
I think what was interesting again was, having, when I was in graduate school, we had studied, Boeing and the whole piece about innovation and the and how, again, the culture of innovation led to some pretty interesting breakthroughs with the 777 when they introduced that some, I guess, 10, 15 years ago. But it also, it's sort of, reminiscent of, there was another interesting book that that focuses on, going from a culture of innovation, to a culture of that's so bottom line driven that it also leads to the disasters, which that article really reminded me of. There was a book that was written by, and I forgot the professor's name, and she was part of the University of Chicago in the business school, and it was called The Normalization of Deviance, and it was about the Challenger disaster, and it talked about how for, that NASA, had a culture in its early days of innovation. It wouldn't have, gotten to the moon and beyond without that, but as they became, more driven by, government oversight and need to be, cost effective, the engineers at NASA knew well ahead of time that there was more than a 70% chance that the O-ring, which was the piece of the Challenger that ended up, failing, would have the potential of failure. And so the whole notion around the normalization of deviance is that you know that there's going to be a potential disaster, but because it doesn't happen time after time, you ignore it because the bottom line says, don't touch it if it's not broken, even though you know that it's broken. And so obviously that led to the disaster with the Challenger. And to me, it was very reminiscent of what happened with the 737 MAX. That there were people there within Boeing, from the Boeing culture that knew there was a problem. And yet the culture there, because it was so overridden by the folks at Lockheed with the financial piece of it, led to a similar type of a disaster.
So it's that, that question that somebody else brought up around, then how do you sustain it? So we have this example from Booking.com, which is around creating a pervasive culture of innovation. And we have this example from Boeing that had that or had enough of it to be successful in a period of time and then difficult to sustain. So, I'm also struck by kind of digital space versus, capital intensive physical building, that there's a differences there as well. So let's talk a little bit about sustainability and embedding in culture and what do you see that makes, as you contrast the two, what makes the difference? And Arnold's brought up the point of being bottom line driven and cost, but there's probably some other nuggets that people took around the story around in the HBR article about the ability to sustain that and actually do it regularly. It's not a specific question, but it's just that idea of sustainability and opening it up. And maybe Nadezhda, I'll start with you.
I was thinking when reading, because I'm a digital native, overwhelming majority of my clients reside in digital space. So it's, and platform thinking as part of ecosystem is very close to me. So when I'm thinking about the culture of experimentation and structures that you need to put in place to sustain it, and the culture that nurtures and make sense of these structures. I sense what Arnold says is the tension between the being cost effective and being innovation driven. There is a question around this paradox, that the paradox space that we're finding ourselves constantly in. There is a cost of running an experiment, of course, but there is also a cost associated with doing nothing. And when I bring this perspective to executive leaders that I'm working with, then it brings sustainability of dynamic change in a whole different perspective. Because unfortunately, financial targets that organizations, especially in the current crisis, are all under pressure to achieve. They also have a dark side or invisible side. So when we think about experimentation and building certain organizational capabilities, it's not only investment, the cost associated of building them, but there is also delayed effect of not investing. And this one is harder to calculate. So this is some thoughts I had as just validating my experience when I was reading this particular article about culture of experimentation. Especially when we talk about the ratio of successful, in the best case, 10% of all experiments run.
Gina, was that you chiming in?
I was going to point out that I see a size aspect in there. In looking at Boeing, it seemed like they were afraid to try things. You know, it either had to be a big magnificent plane or not. So they just kept pasting on to the plane they had. So they were doing little incremental things and not, they didn't have any way to make any big bets. Booking.com seemed to do a good job of both. You know, they were able to totally change approach as well as do some of the incremental things. So it and then that also is reflected in that all of those organizations. I mean, I couldn't possibly get through the list of 30 of them, but you know, in looking at them, it seemed like that's what people were looking for was in the different ways of organizing. It's how to balance that so that you've got a, you know, something where you're going for the moon, literally, to use someone else's NASA analogy, and you're also seeing if, you know, the button needs to be a different color. So I thought that was, the scale was important as well.
Binaz, would you like to jump in at this point?
Yeah, I'm thinking it is the scale, and I'm just reflecting on where we are in the company I work for. It's an ongoing paradox, as Nadisha said. Excuse me if I spelled it, pronounced it wrong. Because the businesses, of course, rely on income one way or another. So there is this continuity of running business in a way where they have to figure out that the resources to fund innovation and experimentation. But what happens is that sometimes the managers or the leaders get so excited about the next best thing, then the whole focus goes on the experimentation. And then the finance guys start knocking on the door. It's like, hello, we have to step back. So it is this balancing act in a way that is the interesting and the challenging part of the story, I guess. Mm.
Diane.
I was reaching for the mute button. On the same article, a couple things that jumped out at me, kind of relevant to what we're saying. The culture of winning gets in the way. And there was this great, I'm looking at that culture of innovation article. And it asked about why don't companies do it more? Central reason is culture, behaviors, beliefs, values. When you emphasize efficiency, predictability, and winning, it leads to thinking that failures are wasteful. So that really struck me that, again, there's this, you know, how we're viewing the value of experiments and the value of failing. And then the other thing that kind of jumped out at me, kind of goes to what we were just saying. There was a point in the article about they started decentralized with experimentation and then started to centralize it. So I thought that was interesting how that's how they got it started. But eventually the structure, someone mentioned structure, they had to kind of pull it back in centrally to really manage it. So a couple things kind of related to some of the comments around that same experimentation.
That ongoing tension of centralized and decentralized, which often isn't the right polarity, but we live with it and people talk about it a lot. Lincoln. We're going to go with Lincoln.
Hi. Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. I'm sharing internet with school. I'm on just audio, not video for you. I'm delighted by everybody's observations. I'm going to say this sort of bluntly first and then provide some other inputs to it just a bit. I think in terms of the Boeing case and the other things that followed, frankly, is our theory has failed us and our practice has failed us. If it is that we know what we know about organizations and how they work, and some of us have enough gray hair, know way back at the beginning of the article, the Boeing article and the things that followed on, to have known those things for a long time, why did Boeing end up in the way that it ended up? Okay, we better. Now we might say it differently. There are, I think, in the video that I do commend, Dr. McGrath said something that I think is probably germane, captures all of it. And she said, we have to worry about incomplete ecosystems, right? Boeing is not an actor in and of itself. It has a lot of others that it acts with, which include its airline customers. I'll tell you that I was in a customer inn with the United vice president who said, you're always eager to come talk to me. Love that, but you add to my cost. So you know, we even flew on United airplanes to go do that. but he wasn't as eager to share in any other ways digitally that we might do now, like with Zoom. Because every interaction he thought it added to his cost. He was happy with the product the way it was. The U.S. government actually was involved, the Department of Defense, in orchestrating the merger between Boeing and McDonnell Douglas because they wanted Boeing's design for the new 35 jet fighter, but McDonnell Douglas had better engineers. Much more expertise in doing that. They had most of the contracts. When I went to Philadelphia plant for the implementation of composites on helicopters, the Army clients wanted rivets put in the composite material to go along with the glue that we used to hold them. And we had a devil of a time convincing them to do something else. And then when I traveled all of the Boeing, McDonnell Douglas, and Lockheed facilities in Long Beach, California, which really was Bosnia. We had 7 units all around the airport. I couldn't get anybody to talk to anybody because they were in their divisions, their business units, and doing what they thought that they should be doing as little organizational machines. So it's great to look at the stories and look at them retrospectively, but we need to be in combat at the moment and make the decision to go left and stand up for that instead of the decision to go right. How do more of that? That's my question.
So as you were talking, I just typed a couple of things in the chat. And Johnny, and we're coming to you next. I don't...
That's a good summary.
And you heard, not a lot of us saw the video, but a couple of other people have recommended it as well, which is are we incomplete? If our practice fails us because we're not looking at the extended ecosystem, your description of the independent business units or the government, which was part of that ecosystem that drove that culture as well, that those are influencers that Are we fully taking them into account, and do the people we work with see beyond their borders and bring in those ecosystems?
Yeah, I use the term parts without a whole as a way to kind of describe what's missing and the effort that we need to put into that we have that. Boeing people got off when Stonecipher showed up, and he spent $1,000 on a conference room table. At the same time, he cut trash collection from every day, which Boeing was doing, to only two times a week, which is what McDonnell Douglas was doing. There was just not a lot of sense making going on in the way that, you know, the leaders work, let alone the way the organization works.
The organization, yeah.
Yeah.
So, Jordina, do you want to add to that? I don't think I've invited you to speak for what.
Yes, I would. So it's interesting, all of the stuff we're talking about, I think ties in with one point. At the very end of that article about the experimentation, culture of experimentation, he puts this key point, which really should have been the title, which is what matters is how decisions are adjudicated under uncertainty in an organization. And I was like, well, you snuck that at the end, like that's the key point. So I feel like everything, almost everything that we're talking about ties back into what's your decision-making model? And so many times you see the decision-making model is like the one guy, the highest paid person, or he gives an example where it was one gatekeeper who was just part of the governance process, who we've talked about this before on this call. You've got some gatekeeper like way down in the organization making huge decisions that affect the whole organization. So I think that if you have your decision-making process for in the hands of one person, whoever it is, instead of using the collective intelligence, you're subject now to swinging pole to pole instead of managing the polarity. I mean, I think that's the whole crux of the whole thing. And Boeing made a very, according to the article anyway, made a very conscious decision to move from engineering model, engineering focus to financial focus. So how do you prevent that? Well, if that's their decision, you can't keep a culture of innovation when you decided not to have one. You know, the only way you can do it is by using collective intelligence instead of putting in the hands of one person who changed their mind or changes the mind of the organization. You know, so that was a highlight for me, was that one sneaky little point in that article. I see Diane laughing.
Diane, you want to chime in?
Did you like the hippo? There was a point where it talked about the highest ranking person in the room making the call. I thought that was kind of funny. That stuff.
I know a lot of hippos.
You know, I think the other part is, or I felt was in that article on innovation, was the power of having the data. So we talk about data-driven decision-making, and I hear that in all of my clients, and I will tell you so many of them don't really have the data that they think they have, or if they have it, they don't really look at it. And
well, they dispute it.
Doing that.
He makes a point.
Does it line up to the decision they want to make?
If it lines up to the decision, the data is great. If it contradicts your opinion or the hippo's decision, then we don't look at the data. I've heard explicitly from executives have said to me, like, I know you got all your data in your map here, but I don't think so. Like, but I don't agree.
Isn't that the famous phrase, if you torture data long enough, it will confess? This is true.
I haven't heard that before.
Yes, and this goes through the system of beliefs and values we have. And this ties, like, our decision making is nurtured by our values and our system of beliefs. Although as much as we want to believe that our decision making process is cognitive and rational, it is not. Quite often we make emotional decisions that go through our belief system and then we rationalize them. Data keeps us anchored in reality. And this is like the power of two, emotional intelligence and cognitive intelligence, come together. But I totally agree that if the first stage, right, of working with grief or not accepting reality is denial. And this is quite often where the transformation work with organizations starts, is with people just denying data.
I felt like you made a good point, though, which is goes back to Lincoln's story, you know, just about the trash versus buying this whatever fancy meeting table, right? That it absolutely rests on a values construct, and it filters into how people prioritize. And I think we're seeing that play out a lot today around the globe related to COVID-19 and how leaders are reacting. And the things they say and what it indicates around their belief system and the decisions they're making. So that's just my little short moment on COVID-19. Arnold, I haven't heard from you for a while. Would you like to chime in?
Well, I mean, not to be too repetitive, because I think that everybody's, I think, hitting the mark from, you know, from very similar perspectives, which is interesting. I mean, I think that, you know, we talk about culture and, you know, what enables an organization to be driven by innovation versus being driven by the bottom line. You know, what I see working with clients, you know, too often, and it gets to the question of how do you define culture, you know, is, you know, and what does it take to create a culture of innovation? You know, one of the things, you know, and it goes back to what I think all of us here are involved in is, you know, how do we help clients design their enterprises, you know, to be a certain way? And hopefully, you know, if you're trying to create a culture of innovation, you have to have an organizational design that enables you to be a culture of innovation. And it's not just, you know, one group within that enterprise that sort of, you know, leads that charge, you know, when other parts of the business, and it gets much more, as somebody else said, you know, much more, you know, complex the larger the organization. You know, it's probably a lot easier for a booking.com than a Boeing, you know, even with all good intentions, you know, to maintain a integrated culture of innovation, because you need all of the systems in place to allow it, from the financial systems to the, you know, to the structural systems, to the, you know, to the, having the right people that are comfortable playing in that kind of an atmosphere an environment. But I think, you know, with everything that I'm seeing with our clients, you know, across all of the market types, you know, everybody, you know, says they want to be innovative, and they recognize the need to be innovative, but don't necessarily have the wherewithal organizationally, you know, to get there. I'm working with a technology client in Phoenix that we were doing a visioning session with senior leadership, you know, and, you know, they were talking about their goals about, you know, being an innovative company and, you know, and wanting to be a leader in their field. And then, you know, then we came to the topic of culture. And what was really, you know, markedly incredible was that when we talked about what their culture was, nobody talked about that they had an innovative culture. And when I pointed out to them that it was interesting that of all the descriptors that they were using to describe their culture, not one person within the C-suite talked about having an innovative culture. And they looked at each other and said, wow. anyway, so I think it really involves, you know, a lot of what we're all about in terms of, you know, how do we help clients and organizations really design their enterprises, you know, to really truly be innovative and creative and get away from the syndrome that you tend to fall into, especially with large organizations and older organizations like Boeing. What was everybody saying?
You're on mute.
I'm on mute. My apologies. This idea of culture of innovation. So, you know, you can't, I don't think, this idea of setting up a program of innovation, right? A programmatic approach has limitations that sets up some systems, but I don't think that sets up culture, which is those interwoven and ecosystem behaviors of how people look and make decisions and test and experiment. And I feel like that was the piece that I took away from that booking article is the innovation resting on a culture of regular testing and gathering information to help you experiment. And so we talk about innovation, which is that the same as experimentation? Are they different? Is innovation reliant on experimentation? I thought that that the system of experimentation, that description of booking.com was very interesting and not something I've often see kind of senior leaders talk about when they talk about innovation is setting up regular, consistent, pervasive experiments. So I'm curious if anybody, maybe Nadezhda, as a digital native, what have you seen, what have you experienced around truly experimentation?
I think the key about innovation and general exploratory approach is very strong rigor and discipline. Innovation quite often either happens by chance, and we've seen a number of unicorn companies just being in the right time, in the right place. But if we want to build innovation as capability of the company, that's a lot of discipline. This is part of the workout. This is organizational fitness for purpose. And fitness does not happen with you overnight. So you got to show up for your workouts in a very consistent manner. You got to have the right mindset. You got to organize yourself holistically and integrally. So it's not just one system or testing suite. It's not just one structure. It's also part of how we see leadership and behaviors. And this pretty much applies to any organizational capabilities. You do not take just one part of organization and expect it to embody this capability. And this is how I see this with the business agility, with innovation, with other organizational capabilities, is consistently and with discipline showing up for your workout.
I love that. That really resonated with me. I'd like to see if anybody else would like to chime in or respond. And I'm going to open it up at this point. We have about 10 minutes left. So we've been sticking to the articles and we followed a thread that seemed to be of interest. So we're opening it up. All of you who said you were just kind of observing are more than welcome at this point to chime in. Diane, did you want to add something? I can see you, so that's why I...
I'm fair game. I thought that was really interesting. Just the structure, you said it earlier, the need to structure to sustain and the culture to nurture, and just that message that it takes time and you have to be rigorous about it. And sometimes I wonder if companies have the, the will to sustain that, because it's not something, it's not a once and done. That's what struck me. Yeah.
Lincoln, did you want to add something?
Yeah, I do. This has been an outstanding conversation. I'm really delighted and informed by my colleagues today. Thank you all for your contribution. I want to say that before we close. I want to make an analogy to perhaps one of the large global organizational changes that has been orchestrated, and to indicate to you that some people are working on a similar one for innovation. So the manufacturing world started with a need driven by Japanese companies primarily at the time to improve the quality of their products. And they developed a large set of methods which began formalized over time, and which we today talk about as quality, right? The epitome of that is the ISO 9000 quality standards that are in a lot of companies that have, they've transcended out of manufacturing and into services, et cetera. And I believe probably all appreciate in our automobiles that we drive, when we can drive these days, the benefit of that, right? Quality is superior in cars than it was 20 years ago. And it's a lot of work, including organizational design work, that's made that happen. What I see in terms when people talk about innovation, in my definition, the culture, and relating to that, is simple culture is what hasn't been formalized yet. So, and it gives us a way to talk about it. So there is an effort, an ISO effort, to formalize innovation. And we have recently published some initial innovation management standards with the intent of them being generic and broadly applicable to help with that formalization. There are the ISO 56000 series, 56000. I've been involved in that work. And I point my clients who need an effort to formalize to any and all and many of those management system standards from ISO. And I would commend those to you as well, colleagues.
Great, thanks for pointing us in that direction, Lincoln. I'm gonna put that in the chat box so that people can remember to look that up. I know that Hillary wanted to join in. Please, Hillary.
I've enjoyed the conversation. Thank you very much. Definitely food for thought. A couple of things come to mind. Having worked at companies that have been very well established and even market leaders in their field, I think there is something about market dominance and market leadership that makes a company very safe, and as a consequence, makes it very comfortable. And I think if you bring in the added dimension of maintaining that comfort through particularly financial performance and other similar indicators, innovation just doesn't come into it. So what was interesting is having done a shift at Swiss Re, which is, I think, second or third in the reinsurance sector, they're very, very conservative. And they took the deliberate decision to create a sub-organization, so Swiss Re Digital, and locate it even in a different country, and also to recruit new people for it. And similarly with Accenture, they bought an innovation consultancy because I think there was tacit recognition that they weren't innovative enough because of their sheer size and scale. The other one that comes into mind is risk. And again, I think the comparison between Boeing and Booking.com is interesting because at the end of the day, if someone turns up and there's a mess with their room, nobody's going to die. But if somebody turns up, gets on a flight and it goes down, lots of people are going to die. And so this is going to lead to a more conservative approach. And sadly, that can also lock in certain approaches, which end up leading to the impact that the risk may have posed in the first place. And I really like Nadezhda's comment about data, and it brings to mind another one, which is lies, damn lies and statistics. Mm-hmm. So again, you can do anything you want with the numbers. And if someone really doesn't like the decision that's offered to them, they ain't going to do it.
Yeah. Thank you, Hillary. Those are good dimensions that we hadn't surfaced yet. Thank you. Arnold, I was trying to see who's come off mute and who I haven't called on in a while. Jordina, did you want to? We've got about 3 minutes left.
I'll just say one thing. I just want to give a shout out to that last article that was really, really long. And I didn't give it the time that it deserved, but I think that it really did a service to our community of bringing different communities together. I mean, I'm not really an org design person, but I know that like the agile people are like, don't talk to the org design people. So this really kind of put it all in one place is like, here's the set of stuff that we're all looking at. And I think I'm going to share that out there. I'd love to have more conversations about the different models that are out there. Cause I think some people with the new models just think like, that's the only thing that ever was invented, right? It's like, it's the old way or it's this one, it's holacracy, right? So I think looking at them as a set with different characteristics is so awesome. So I'd love to talk about that more.
Yeah, I agree on that. And I can see why he's intellectually curious about how do we compare and contrast? And is there a way to understand the dimensions in which they're similar and different, and then how does that inform what we might do? It was interesting, none of us mentioned the technology article. So if you look at all the articles we touched on, there was the story about the kind of like report from the field, and here's this technology we're using around picking an appropriate model. and nobody touched on that. So
it was super cool.
Who we are or where we, our energy went today. Anybody have any that last?
That was a cool article though.
I see some head nodding. People thought it was cool. All right, I think we got to start to wrap up. Thank you all for joining us. This is a little bit how this goes. We go around the room, we share some thoughts, we have a little bit of crosstalk. We always have a big group. So, you know, we can't always do breakout rooms. I don't know, Tanya, if we've ever done breakout rooms in this forum, but it came to my mind is sometimes getting the three-person conversation allows a little bit more crosstalk. I so appreciate that you guys were all here, that you shared your thoughts and spent a little bit of time with us, took time out of your day and just had some connection with others around the globe. And thank you for that. I'm going to turn it back to Tanya to see if she has any closing announcements or things she'd like to say.
No, just again, thank you for your time today. I'll send an email out to everyone when I've got the recordings and a download of the chat content added to the website. So you have that to refer to if you would like. We'll have some interesting news coming out here to the community in the next week or so about the transition from our 2020 conference and an attempt to make it a series of virtual offerings instead of an in-person conference. So if anybody does have any super engaging, exciting ways to use Zoom that they've seen starting to happen with some webinar sessions, please reach out to me because that's the next step for our planning committee is to explore some different ways to make up for not being in person, which is such a huge bonus for our annual conference is those dialogues that take place around the tables that aren't going to happen with this different situation. So reach out to me and let me know. With that, I'm going to go ahead and stop the recording for now and wish you all a great rest of your day or evening and look forward to connecting again next month.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Stay well.
Thank you.
Bye.